for the latest podcasts, for the latest sports news, and for Tetra and Rich, download the 98.5 The Sports Hub app now.
Patterson again motions right to left. Brady turns, gives it to Michelle, runs it to the left side, pushing his way to the goal line, driving forward. He's in. Go. Touchdown, Patriots!
It's a way to establish the run here. That's a good drive. Short field, you capitalize, you get some push by your offensive line, and then the young rookie, you get him cranked up. And I'm telling you, Bob, he's better the more you give him the ball.
Five, the Sports Hub, Ryan Johnston, Michael Hurley in for Toucher and Rich. You know, I feel like this is a very appropriate. When I think Bob Sosi, songs like that.
Bob requested really that to lead into his interview.
I'm sure he did. Bob Sosi, of course.
That actually wasn't on the air. That was just Bob listening to it on the phone.
Oh, that's what, gotcha. Bob Sosi is brought to you by the New England Fat Loss Personal DNA Plate Strategy. When you know your plate, Mike Hurley, you maintain your weight. It's science, not sales. New England Fat Loss is New England's long-term solution for sustainable weight loss. Good morning, Bob Sosi.
Hey, good morning, guys. I know I've been hanging around Zoe a long time, but he hasn't worn off on me that much.
Well, can we ask you, Bob, some controversial Christmas music opinions just being shared? Where do you stand on Wonderful Christmas Time and Wham's Last Christmas? Answer correctly, please.
They wouldn't. Neither one would make my playlist.
All right.
I'm sorry.
Good to know.
But I'm with Ryan. I'm with Ryan on Feliz Navidad as well.
A little repetitive.
Very repetitive.
A little repetitive. Yes. If I had to work in retail and be subjected to that, I would have quit math. You know, rather than and give it up. Well, anyway,
fair point. Well, yeah. We're talking about unpleasant things to hear in your ears around Christmas time. Yeah. Your partner there, Scott Zolak, sounded like he was upset a couple times during the game yesterday. Were you scared that Scott was getting a little bit angry there in the middle of a football game?
I was scared that we didn't have the delay on at one point. But, yeah, Zoe was a little feisty yesterday and not too pleased, especially with the first play of the third quarter, in particular the way they ran the ball in the first half and then to come out. And, of course, for Brady to throw that pass through the hands of Gronk to be intercepted. And you know, I think there's still a feeling in the booth and elsewhere, of course, that this team is trying to find its offensive identity. And, you know, it looked like yesterday, I think Zoe talked about it during the course of the game, especially early on with Burkhead following Michelle and with James White in the mix in the backfield, and then, you know, with the intent to try to get the tight end going, that perhaps, you know, the team was still searching for the identity rather than allowing it to develop in the flow of the game. And as we saw, 47 rushes, 273 yards, you know, that truly became the identity by day's end.
Bob, you know, we were talking earlier about the makeup of this team and, you know, the at times struggles offensively and, you know, people are worried about whether Brady's hurt and even though he says he isn't and Gronkowski zero catches yesterday and all that. And I asked the question of Jeff Howe earlier. I'll ask it to you. Do you think if the Patriots offense is not firing on all cylinders that they are capable of winning a playoff game?
Capable of winning a playoff game? Yes. Capable of winning all playoff games? No. And I think it really depends on the matchup. If they have Kansas City again, for example, and if they have to go to Arrowhead, for example, they're going to have to be a lot better than they have been of late. And I think they're going to find themselves in another, you know, wild shootout. Even last night, as good as Seattle played in controlling the ball and doing an excellent job really on both sides of the ball, relatively speaking, still a high-scoring game. You still got to score 30-plus points to beat Patrick Mahomes and that Chiefs offense. You know, can they get by a first-round opponent, you know, especially here at home, with a less-than-efficient offensive performance or at least something that resembles more of what we've seen the second half of the season? You know, yes. But, I think if they're going to travel, especially, but take on a Kansas City or even a Los Angeles – in the next round, then they're going to have to be a lot better offensively.
Bob, evaluating the defense yesterday, obviously it's a good game. They force the turnovers. They make game-changing plays. They play good defense. But what I'm having trouble in sort of putting a proper evaluation on, maybe you can help, because you've watched a lot of quarterbacks play against the Patriots, and especially in that building. What do we make of the defense, considering Josh Allen was the most Jekyll and Hyde quarterback I think I've ever seen? His pass was either going into the eighth row of the stands, or he was throwing a 35-yard bullet to a receiver's chest that the receiver would drop. So how do we sort of put in perspective what the Patriots defense did against an offense like that?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, yesterday, and I don't want to take anything away from the defensive performance. They did the job they had to do. And they confused the young quarterback. We saw, you know, once again, those looks with either one down lineman or down no down lineman. And, you know, the Bills have been improved with Allen at quarterback as opposed to the first two starters this year. At least you should see Peterman and Anderson, of course. And they won a game with Matt Barkley. But there aren't a lot of, let's face it, there's not a lot of talent around him. Robert Foster's been really a nice story the second half of the season, and McCoy doesn't run like he used to and certainly wasn't the weapon in the passing game that we've been accustomed to seeing him be in the past. So I think you have to take into account the caliber of the competition yesterday and the quarterback. And again, that's not to diminish what the Patriots defense did, because there are positive signs. But I would point to what they've done at home against Kirk Cousins and Aaron Rodgers more so than what they did yesterday in terms of, you know, how good this defense can be.
Bob, the we were talking a few minutes before you came on about Rob Gronkowski. No catches yesterday on three targets. We know this season has been a struggle for him. Do you feel like he's got big games in him? I mean, we're staring down the barrel of the playoffs here, and as Mike pointed out, you know, last year in the Super Bowl, he took over in the second half of that game, and they just said, we're going to feed the big guy the ball and march down the field. Does he still have that in him?
You know, Ryan, you keep hoping that he does, and, you know, you still want to give somebody like that the benefit of the doubt that one game, one half, he can recapture some of that magic and become the force that he has been. You mentioned the Super Bowl, especially the second half, the Pittsburgh game last year. And he's gone against the Steelers and the Bills the last 2 weeks. And granted, it's year to year. Things change. Personnel changes. Schemes change. But you know, he was a guy that neither of those teams in the past could cover. And for all intents and purposes, but for two catches on the final series against the Steelers, he was a non-factor in the passing game, at least in terms of catching the ball. He does dictate some coverage at times, but not nearly the impact that we've been accustomed to seeing. You know, I think with the right matchup, and again, if they can get him going early, then it would be like a few weeks ago when Gronk had a very productive game for the Pats against the Dolphins. Then I think, you know, they can have more reliability from 87, the kind of reliability that we've been accustomed to seeing in past years. You know, whether it's physical, whether it's kind of the emotional toll of those physical problems and not being able to be the guy that he once was, I think it's a combination of both. I think also the fact that Dwayne Allen is out there as a force in the run game now, and maybe with the bye as well, that alleviates some of the burden that Gronk has had to bear after he dealt with the span of, I think, four games where he was out for three of four or five and you know, physically worn down and being out there for almost all the snaps and being such a force in the run game. I had to wonder, you know, whether there were residual effects of that wearing him down. But there's no question about it. Again, we're talking about the offense getting to where it wants to be. Gronk has got to be a bigger factor catching the ball down the road in the playoffs.
Well, I feel like you can't talk about one without the other. So when it comes to Gronkowski, I feel like Brady is obviously the other part of it. And, you know, he's been discussed and analyzed and dissected a lot. And I think physically in Miami and Pittsburgh, he looked like the quarterback we're used to seeing. Obviously, I think yesterday was a little bit different. But what are you seeing from Brady? Did yesterday look different to you? And is there any sort of did it look physical, like there was a physical limitation on the field yesterday?
You know, Mike, I think that we've seen signs of maybe the physical impact affecting his mechanics at times. It hasn't been consistently on every throw. It has been periodically For example, early in the Tennessee game, we noticed it. In fact, as early as the second pass of that game, where he was bailing out, very cognizant of the kind of pressure that might be coming at him. Then in the Miami game, late in the first half, when he missed that throw to Chris Hogan in particular before taking the sack. And then in the Steelers game, the final play of that game. But then there have been other times where he stood in there and stepped up. And even yesterday, there was a particular play that I heard Jeff Howe refer to on my way in to Foxborough today, where you saw him navigating in the pocket and maneuvering in and around defenders. Some of the things I thought stood out to me yesterday that impacted the passing game, and not necessarily Brady in particular, but you know, obviously they ran the ball 47 times, so they lean heavily on the run. There are a lot of condensed and tight formations. There's a lot of sets with one receiver or even patterns with just two receivers. There was early pressure when he did drop back to pass, and I think you see with Brady, especially with pressure early, Tom's going to live to fight another down, another series, another game. And I thought that Trent Brown got off to a little bit of a shaky start yesterday in pass blocking, and Brady got some pressure from the blind side. It was the sack that was led really by Jerry Hughes' pressure, and then a couple of other times where it looked like, you know, the guy coming around that defensive end position beat Brown. But you know, I think that they're just searching for an identity offensively, and there is no rhythm right now to the passing attack. It started to develop a little bit late yesterday between Brady and Edelman. Julian's the one guy that he truly trusts, even as we saw in the Pittsburgh game. That was the guy that he went to on the final play.
Bob Soucy, you can hear him with the call of the action, of course, this coming Sunday as the Patriots will wrap up their regular season against the Jets. You have any concerns about that game?
You know what, I do, and from this standpoint, you know, yesterday they faced a mobile quarterback with a really strong arm, but very inaccurate without much around him. And I think next week they're going to face a mobile quarterback who's, I think, been very impressed. Now, I didn't get a chance to see yesterday's game, but apparently led a late drive to help force overtime, and then you go to 38-38. So the Jets put 38 points on the board. He's mobile. He looked good to me watching him in the Texans game. I think he's very poised. He's a guy that has, I think, a little more around him in Robbie Anderson and Jermaine Kearse, certainly, than the Bills have in their wide receiving core. I think that the Jets will play very hard. It will remind me, I think, when it's all said and done, of the final game the Jets played at home under Rex Ryan. It really was a struggle for the Patriots to go into the Meadowlands late in that 2014 season and beat New York with really a terrible team. But they played very hard for Ryan in his final home game, and I would expect the Jets to come out in what most anticipate as the final game for Todd Bowles and give a really quality effort against the Patriots. And also the fact that the Patriots have still kind of floundered offensively these last few weeks. And we talked about it, whether it's Brady, whether it's Gronk, whether it's the lack of an identity overall, and they've got to be better against the Jets, I think, certainly, than they were against the Bills when it comes to passing to complement the running game.
I don't know about you, Bob, but I'm just excited that, you know, what when the schedule comes out in whatever it is, March, and we see Buffalo and New York at the end of the season, we kind of say, blah, but it is pretty interesting stuff, pretty captivating.
Yeah, I think so. Absolutely, Mike. You know, and one of the things, you know, you hear it so often, and you think, oh, it's just lip service. It's cliched. You know, it's a divisional game, and, you know, they've got a lot to play for, pride, et cetera. And the last couple of years, you know, by this stage of the season, it has proven to be just lip service. But I think certainly going in yesterday, there was a legitimate amount of concern with good reason. And they didn't put that ball game away until Letterman made the play where he landed on the two defenders, the 15, and got back on his feet. And I think next week's going to be a similar kind of game. I would expect that the Jets are going to come out and play hard. It's going to be very competitive for a while. Ultimately, the Patriots should prevail. I mean, they've got a lot on the line, and, you know, it's nice to play a meaningful game, even in Week 17. You know, unfortunately, you wish you could rest some guys that are a bit banged up and take advantage of maybe a day off in the season finale and then the bye week. But nonetheless, from a fan's point of view, from a media's point of view, hey, from the media's point of view, you know, it is a refreshing change in that sense.
Well, and Houston did their part yesterday. So,
yeah.
You know, a chance to play for a bye next week, always important to this team. And who knows, maybe even first place in the AFC if the Raiders can somehow muster up an effort next week. That might be asking a little much. But, Bob, appreciate the time. Merry Christmas to you and the family, and we will talk to you again down the road.
All right, thanks, guys. Merry Christmas to you and yours.
Merry Christmas. Bob's the best.
Of course he is.
Best. The best.
Do you think he has bruises on his arm from being next to Zoe during the game.
That's dangerous. I've been around Zoe.
I know Capello's in the middle of them a lot of times. So
I've been around Zoe through a lot of moods of Zoe, but never like pissed Zoe. That's a frightening. That's not an. You don't see that too often. So being near
Zoe,
it would be uncomfortable.
Zoe can, you know, do bodily harm when he's in a good mood.
Right.
Right. He just comes in and starts. You know, he's kind of jockey mentality where he just comes up and starts like whacking you on the back. And
right. He comes in like the Kool-Aid man through the wall, and you never know what it's going to be. But that's the happy Zoe.
Yeah.
Angry Zoe. I don't want to see that. I don't want to be near that.
Kool-Aid man never yell out,
what are we doing here? What are we doing?
MFers? Like, yeah. Yeah. All right. We will continue.
Good Zoe impressions by us.
I thought so. We will continue as we take you up until 10 o'clock. It's Ryan Johnston, Michael Hurley talking some Patriots with you here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Stay tuned for more Toucher and Rich on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Can mornings get any better?
Yeah. Could you please help me?
Toucher and Rich, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Now it's time to get to the stuff that we couldn't get to. It's the stack.
Ryan Johnston, Michael Hurley in for Toucher and Rich. The Stack is brought to you by Harvard Pilgrim Healthcare. Michael Hurley.
Yes, sir.
What do you got for the Stack today?
So I feel like we touched on this maybe like 3 hours ago, so we got a different people listening. I feel like we should quickly take a look at the things that the records that the Patriots set or tied or added to yesterday, because I feel like we do sometimes get lost in the week to week, the day to day, the Brady not looking good, Gronkowski zero catches, and just sort of, you know, zoom out a little bit and see the perspective on what this team's done, because it was pretty, there was quite a bit. Obviously, we know the 10th straight AFC East title. Do you know what the next most division, consecutive division wins anyone else has?
I believe you said seven.
Seven, the LA Rams from the 1973 to 79. Who could forget that run? The Pittsburgh Steelers won six in a row during their 70s. Vikings won six in a row during the 70s. Cowboys, six in a row, 66 to 71. Browns, back in the 50s. Who could forget that run? But no one's even had eight or nine, let alone 10. So that's one thing. And then people dismiss the AFC East, whatever. You can do that if you want. But the Patriots have now made the playoffs for 10 straight years. That's a record. They passed the 75 to 83 Dallas Cowboys, who made it 9 years in a row. The Colts during the Peyton Manning era, 9 in a row.
That's 10 straight is a record.
It just speaks to football. You know, like, what is the average career length? The fact that we're talking about Brady.
But you think, like, back in the olden days when, like, you know, it was.
Yeah, like, when you're just like the
although
Browns.
Although there were fewer playoff spots
the Packers
back then,
or something,
too, I guess.
I guess there's 12 teams. Yeah. You can only send so many. But I think it's just, it speaks, like, where Brady basically has two Hall of Fame careers. You know, he's at the latter part of the second one. So, you know, 10 straight playoff seasons, and then I think this is the biggest one to me. The most consecutive seasons with 10 or more wins, they now have 16 of those, which is, quick math, at least 160 wins since 2003. That ties the 49ers during the Joe Montana and Steve Young eras from 1983 to 1998, and they've only gone 10-6 twice during that time. So it's not just like they're barely winning 10. The Niners, by contrast, went 10-6 six times. So that's just how much better. And you look at the peers this year, we talked about that Field Yates tweet earlier. No one else. I mean, the Colts have won 11. They've had 11 10 win seasons since in the past 16 years, where the Patriots had 16. It's just, you aren't that consistent in today's NFL or any era's NFL. It's ridiculous. And for as much as we can, you know, break down the issues plaguing the team heading into January and, you know, worrying about whether they even make the championship game, let alone the Super Bowl, it's worth sort of just breathing that in, because it's absurd.
We talk all the time about how people don't realize how great they have it around here, right?
Which I don't even blame people, because I was talking to Matt, like, these things are ridiculous, and fast forward 15 years and try to imagine what people, how people will be digesting the Patriots then, when they're like any other team, will think back of this era as, you know, the golden eras. But
well, there's just,
but during
there
it,
are legitimately so many people here who aren't old enough to remember what it's like to not have a team like this.
Yeah, like when I was a kid, the Patriots would be awful, and then they'd beat the Dolphins in December and mess up the Dolphins' playoff plans, and you'd be like, oh, big win for the Patriots. That's what qualified as a big win. And what they've morphed it into, it's ridiculous. And one more thing, most division, you know, the realignment in 02, they've won 15 division titles since then. The next closest team would be Green Bay and Indianapolis, who have won 9 apiece. So it's, man, it's preposterous.
I got a quick morality question for you.
I will probably get it wrong.
There are no wrong answers here.
I went to Catholic school for 12 years. I feel like they're big on there being wrong answers on morality questions. But
well,
go, shoot.
I'm not a nun. I'm not going to whack you with a ruler if you get it incorrect.
They never did that.
Did you happen to see the story? It's about a week or so, maybe a little longer ago, where a armored car in New Jersey lost its payload.
No.
There was
it was like raining money, right?
Yeah,
on the interstate.
So on a highway in New Jersey, like thousands upon thousands of dollars,
yep,
spilling out. They had over more than $500,000 in cash in the back of a Brinks truck in North New Jersey near MetLife Stadium.
Yep.
Just goes spilling out. It was an absolute gong show, people jumping out of their cars trying to grab the money, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Police said that more than $200,000 was recovered at the scene. More than $100,000 has been returned in the days since then, including one person who brought in about $90,000.
Boo!
They took it
Boo.
And then brought it back. But they are still saying that there is still $188,000 that is left unaccounted for right
Whose
now.
Money is it? You know, like, where was it going? A bank?
I would
Does the bank
yeah,
even
I
notice
imagine.
That?
I mean, it's insured, right? I would think.
Who's returning cash? It's cash.
$90,000 in cash. Again, they took it home, and then they brought it back.
I have been watching Ozark, so I'm pretty well-versed in laundering money.
Yeah.
I feel like spending $90,000 isn't as easy as you might think. You got to just use it for, like, groceries. Basically.
Well, yeah, you can
and
pay
small
for,
items.
You know, going out, you go out to the
True.
Bar, you always pay cash. You go out to dinner, you pay cash.
Like, True. But it's not like you get $90,000 and you can go out and buy like a Ferrari. Oh, those are probably more than $90,000. You can't go out and buy a Range Rover with cash.
No, but you could take a vacation.
With you cash?
Know, yeah, well, you put it on your credit card and then pay off the, you know.
With cash?
Yeah.
You can do that?
A little bit here and there.
A little bit.
Like, you can just, like, you don't put $90,000 into the bank. We all, I think we get that. But, you know, you could put like a few hundred at a time and.
Like seems like a headache. Yeah, I could see a goody two shoes being very. But why would they take $90,000 to begin with? That's too much. When you're taking, when it's raining money on the highway, you got to have some sense of.
You got to be a quick hit. Like
you want to talk about morality? There's scales, and if you run away with $6,000, you're fine. Just go home. If you run away with $90,000, you got you
well,
built yourself.
Maybe it was like
more
bound together in some way. Like it was just like a brick of money. So they just picked it up, tossed it in the back seat, and.
I also minored in philosophy in college, which was very functional and useful for job searching, for sure. Why minor in something that's useful in the world? But anyways, I subscribe to the philosophy of finders keepers, losers weepers. So
I believe that was Socrates who came up with that first.
Yes,
right?
I believe, yeah. It was, or maybe it was Locke. I forget. It might have been more modern, the finders keepers philosophy. But yeah, come on. What are you giving it back for?
Well, see, I think a lot of people...
You feel bad?
Well, not even that you'd feel bad. You feel like they're gonna find it out.
How? Did they put tracer on the cash?
Do you know how often you're on camera, especially in a metropolitan
True.
Area? Like, this isn't far outside of New York.
People were
there's
filming
highway
it. I saw
cameras.
Videos.
There's people. So, like, you just feel like, all right, the police are probably going through YouTube videos of this stuff, taking down license plates.
All right.
And they're going to come knocking on your door one day and be like,
okay, but say you, so the person who returned 90, I hope they kept 12 in the under the mattress.
I mean, you take a little something for the effort.
I would hope so.
I would think
so.
You at least get, you know,
you don't
little,
get brownie points for giving it all back.
Like, do they get, I, if
they're not
somebody,
counting it.
If somebody brings back $90,000, do they give you a reward for that or they just, you know, pat you on the head and send you on your way? Or do they kind of give you the evil eye? Like, where have you been for the last couple of days with this $90,000? Would you suspect, if somebody brought back $90,000,
I'd say how much
would
you
suspect
spend?
That they kept some of it for themselves?
I would hope so. We're humans. We're not broken. You get that. I mean, you at least go shopping. At least go out to eat.
Yeah, just, you know, a few hundreds off. This stack's a little short.
Yeah, come on.
It was that when I found it, I swear.
I would do that. If I was worried about being caught on camera and I had X dollars that I got, I would return 0.6X. Because they have a general idea.
So 60%?
Yeah, they have a general idea, but they have no idea how much you have, if there's highway cameras or whatever.
Right. They could see you picking up money, but they wouldn't be able to tell how much you right. really got, I guess. Yeah.
This is a dream scenario. It'd be nice. Just run into a truck full of money.
I mean,
that's
there
raining.
Were people everywhere, like just cars screeching to a halt.
Well, put it this way, like when, you know, a base stealer in the World Series wins everyone a free taco. I remember the line, the line down Comm Ave when there was a Taco Bell at BU was like 6 blocks for a 99 cent taco.
Go
so
to any
now
sporting event.
Hundreds floating in the air. I can't imagine.
Mike, go to any sporting event where they're throwing T-shirts into the crowd and see the reaction of
a trash,
fully grown
a dish
adult
rag.
T-shirt. You know, a fully grown adults who have jobs and disposable
yep.
income trying
a 99
to get
cent
a
white
free T-shirt,
which probably doesn't fit them and probably has 3 ads on it. You're right. People, we like free stuff.
I got one of those at a Bruins game.
Was it wrapped up like a burrito?
It was, and it had a free burrito coupon inside.
See, I'd fight for that.
That
I
was
would
the best.
Throw down for
I didn't
that.
Care about the T-shirt. Like, free Chipotle burrito, I'm all in.
Yeah, that's a – I mean, you got to throw an elbow or two to get that. It's
still have
it.
To spring for the guacamole, but, you know.
But at that point, you got your hundreds from the money raining situation on the highway. You're good.
All right, we'll wrap up this edition of Toucher and Ritz. It's Ryan Johnston, Michael Hurley in for the guys. We'll find out who – is coming up next. It's like a grab bag here on
it might be Santa Claus himself.
We'll find out who that is next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.